Welcome to the F3, Female Forward Finance. I'm your host, Jill Faraday Lloyd, a financial advisor at UBS Private Wealth, and I'm on a mission to help women have agency with their capital. The F3 is a space for real conversations about money, power, and everything in between. You'll hear from experts, entrepreneurs, and everyday Janes about the choices they're making when it comes to their wealth. These are critical conversations because women are earning, building, and shaping what comes next in the world, and it's time we own every bit of our power. In this episode, I speak with Kate Luzio, the CEO and founder of Luminary, about scaling with intention, mastering your numbers, and knowing exactly when to say yes or no to a sale. Whether you're years from selling or weighing an offer right now, this conversation is packed with candid insights and actionable advice for founders who want to exit on their own terms. Let's dive in.
Before we dive in, though, I want to talk a little bit about an idea. Imagine, if you will, a three-legged stool. If one leg was missing, the stool would topple over, right? Similarly, when planning to sell your business, you need to focus on three key areas. You want to maximize the transferable value of your business. That's leg one. You want to maximize your personal financial wealth. That's two. And you want to have a plan for your what's next. And that's three. Today, I'm particularly excited to host Kate Luzio, the founder and CEO of Luminary, a gender-inclusive global B2B and B2C professional education and networking platform, driving impact for individuals and enterprise organizations through its engaged, diverse community and robust suite of tools, resources, and services designed to support all phases of a person's professional and personal journey. And like many entrepreneurs, Kate is growing her business for an eventual exit. Welcome, Kate. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here, Jill. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I would love to start by you telling us a little bit about your background and what forced you or caused you or made you want to start Luminary.
I think I didn't know it, but I always had an idea of what community meant to me, just starting out, not just my career, but when I was little. I fell into finance. I was recruited into finance. I was working at a startup. This is back in the late 90s. And I got recruited into finance. And it was never something that I had a plan for, but I ended up loving it. I truly loved working. A majority of my career, almost 20 years, was in corporate banking. Loved the client side, loved the people development side. But like many of us, on the side of my desk, I was mentoring others, not just women, but a lot of women, just because they saw me as a senior woman. I was building community inside the company through our networks, our women's networks, our ERGs. And at the same time, especially as my last couple of years, I was watching this explosion, if you will, of small business owners, entrepreneurs, founders that were seeking capital, seeking support, seeking resources. And yet a lot of the conversations that I was having with both my clients as well as the people inside the organization and then sort of, again, outside these business owners, fundamentally they were seeking community. They were seeking people to bounce ideas off. They were seeking mentorship. They were seeking education so that they could invest in themselves, whether that was their professional development, their skills, their businesses. And so in 2018, after a very pivotal conversation with one of my amazing mentors, who's still a mentor, he said, "What do you want to do with the rest of your life? Because you can do whatever you want." And here I was, 42, thinking, but this is what I do. And it had never occurred to me, because I am a traditional Gen Xer, I think, it's just the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. So let's be very clear. But I took a step back and thought, what do I want to do? And one of the other things that he said that I'll never forget was, You want to have impact in everything that you do. How do you do that in your job? And so a few weeks later, not that long later, I wrote a business plan. And that eventually became Luminary. 8 months after writing that business plan, we launched the physical side of the business, which is in New York City. So it was a very compressed time frame as far as writing the business plan, saying I'm getting out of this thing that I've loved for almost 20 years, and never say never, I probably will find my way back, but launching this business and deciding that I'm going to do it on my own, I use my own capital, and there are lots of reasons for that.
Well, let's go into that, because there are many forms to finance a business, many different ways. And I meet many different women who have built businesses through, you know, revenue, mm-hmm. through grants, through
friends and family, through angel,
through venture.
Right.
Right. So tell me why you decided to self-fund.
So number one, I had the capital available. Right. And that's a privilege. And that's a privilege of working for, you know, 20 plus years and saving money and putting my money to work for me in the form of lots of bonuses. And so, but I worked really hard for that. Two, when I did my financial projections, which I put a exclamation point behind that, because I think a lot of people start businesses and think this is a great idea, we'll just see what comes in. No, you need financials and you need financial projections. And so one of the reasons I did that was to see how much money upfront would I have to put up if I wanted to do this on my own. What was the runway of that capital? And then if I ever decided to raise, what did that actually mean? The second reason I did those financial projections was I also wanted to see, could I create a business that was self-sustaining and that was profitable? And how long did I realistically think that that was going to take? The third is, I didn't want to wait. And we know how long it can take for the fundraising cycle. Now, in 2018, that was a pretty good cycle. There was a lot of cash in the market. It was pretty cheap. But I am not, Jill, you know me a little, I'm just not someone that can wait when I see an opportunity. And so I thought, I'm going to strike while the iron's hot. I'm going to use my capital. And then if I know what I think I know, if I decide to ever raise, it's going to make it that much easier.
Yeah, you'll own more of the company.
Exactly.
And you'll have to sell less of it.
Exactly. And I will hopefully have, and I do, have a profitable, sustainable business that the revenue that we generate, one, yes, of course, some of that goes back into my pocket. It goes into my employees' pockets, and it's able to reinvest in the business, like our acquisitions.
I want to talk about the acquisitions, because if we go back to this notion of the three-legged stool and maximizing the transferable value of your business, I think there was a moment that you shared with me where the light bulb went off on how could you, Kate, maximize the value of Luminary?
Yeah, you know, I was watching all of these other founders, and I have the, again, I think it's, I don't know if it's the luxury or the privilege, because of what I did for many years and because of the network that I had to tap into and the skills and the resources, was I did not want to be in a place where I was constantly proving, but also just building for the sake of building. So I talked to a lot of founders. I use the example of my friends over at the Glow Recipe, who have built just an incredible business. And they did it very differently. They did that. They bootstrapped for, I like to call it stiletto strapping, because for women it's harder for lots of reasons.
Dancing backwards.
And they went the private equity route. And I watched a couple of other peers, let's call it peers in our category, and I just knew I wanted to build it differently. I also, again, going back to this idea of profitability, you know, in 2018, no one was really even talking about profitability until probably the last
2022.
Exactly.
When you couldn't raise capital.
When you couldn't raise anything. And the other thing that I saw was when I was approached about potentially selling the business, and two, I had already done our first acquisition and realized that was extremely accretive to the business. And I could continue, and we do continue to build organically, but then why would I go out and build all of these things if they're already in the market? And could I build a business a different way by buying and bolting on? And that became our strategy.
And so you've bought, how many acquisitions have you?
We've done three.
You've done three. And you have been approached to sell the business.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide not to sell?
Well, first I will say for anybody listening that thinks, well, I don't know if I ever want to sell, or I don't know if I can sell, or I don't know if I can acquire, take every meeting. You know, it's really important to understand your options. For me, I will say when I started the business back in 2018, we really formally launched in early 2019. I didn't think I would ever sell a business. I thought I'm going to build this and it's going to be my legacy. By the way, you can have legacy lots of different ways, and I've figured that out over the last 6 years. But as we started to build and we looked around and saw many of our peers were not doing as well. And by the way, I wish they all were doing well. We need them to be in this category.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that maybe this was a business that could grow to sell. And doesn't mean I'm going to be out of that business. But when I was approached, and this wasn't that long ago, I really just said, let's have a conversation. Because what is that going to do? It's a great learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And as business owners, as leaders, we should always be learning. You never know it all. And if you do know it all, then you shouldn't be in the business anymore because you're not challenged. And I took it as a great learning opportunity. We ultimately decided with the potential acquirer that the numbers didn't make sense for lots of reasons on both sides. And there was a different path that we wanted to go on, and I think they wanted a different path as well. And we parted as friends. But I learned a lot, and I will pull on that experience probably for the rest of my life, because of what I learned in that process. And the other thing that it prepared me for was to have even deeper discussions going forward with other potential, whether we're acquiring or we're being talked to about funding, which we get quite regularly now.
Well, one of the things that's critical for founders, particularly as they're starting to scale,
mm-hmm.
their business actually has tremendous value, is to build a team.
I love it.
Right? And I think that was something that was a great experience for you as you went through the process, even if it was in the mental arithmetic around, does it make sense to sell? So how did you go about finding your team members and who were on them?
Yeah, and this is so critical. Again, whatever stage you're at, you know, I've said since the day I started talking about Luminary, you have to have a banker that you trust. We'll talk about financial advisor in a second, but a banker that understands your company and the needs of your company and how you're going to grow the company, an accountant and a lawyer. All three of those people that are an extension of your team are there to help you and protect you. The fourth person, especially if you are thinking about, if you have raised, this is, I think, an absolutely must-have, and or if you are thinking about exit, you need a financial advisor. And I will tell you, when I started to think about this, it was my lawyer that told me, hey, have you already started talking to your financial advisor about if this moves forward, what does that mean for you? It was so pivotal because that was the last thing on my mind. I was focused on the business and the growth of it, and it was so eye-opening. So I really appreciate that our lawyer, and he's great, said, you know, go talk to a financial advisor. And so even though we didn't move forward, it was super helpful. And now I will not have any conversation about the business and proceeds of the business without pulling in my financial advisor.
Yeah, that's the second leg of the stool, right?
It's exactly.
Maximizing your personal financial, with having the agency of knowing what your number is.
Yeah.
And if you know that it costs you throw out $1 million a year to run your lifestyle, you got to make sure that you exit with enough money to put in the bank that can generate that type of cash for you. So
yeah.
You're singing my song.
And I do clearly. Think, Jill, I think people often think, well, it's not that time yet. There's no time like the present to also just educate yourself on the process. Right? It doesn't hurt anyone to have that conversation and to learn. And I think even before you are thinking about an exit, talking to a financial advisor about how much is your take home? What's your distribution every month? Because I think for people that leave corporate and they go from a biweekly salary to I'm not getting paid maybe in those early days, to how much do I take? How much do I take home? Understanding what eventually you want your lifestyle to be, how much you want to save for retirement, because most small business owners and founders don't all of a sudden start an IRA. They're focused on putting the money in the business. So I think having those conversations earlier is really important.
Well, I think maybe your background in corporate banking helped you look at, understanding your business cash flow.
Yes.
But this experience helped you think about your personal cash flow.
100%. 100%. And it was definitely taking a back seat. No longer is.
Yeah. So even if you are not selling your business, but you're building your business, you also need to be thinking about what am I building outside of the business?
Exactly. You don't want to wake up 10 years into the business and say there's no value. There's no, maybe there's value for the business, but there's no personal value for you as the founder. What are you going to do with the business? What if you don't want to run it anymore and you're not going to be able to sell it? And I talk to founders, a lot of our founders in Luminary community, a lot of them are in that place. I'm just kind of done with running my business. What are my options?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the more we talk about this out loud, the better. That's how all three of these acquisitions happened. It wasn't because I proactively approached someone. It was because somebody I know in my network approached me and said, hey, I'd love to introduce you, or I think there's an opportunity. Would you like to be connected?
And I think as a founder, having a financial advisor there to run models for you,
yes,
about different outcomes is extremely helpful, right? In this scenario, I clear this. In this scenario, I clear this, but
yep,
I have a paycheck for X number of years, and I've got rolled equity. And
exactly.
Right? So what do each of those look like relative to the vision that you have for the life that you want to live and you want your children to live and the legacy that you want to leave?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe you want to sell and go on and build your next company. That is not me. But I don't want to build another company. I know that of myself. But I don't, whenever this journey ends, whatever that looks like, I won't be sitting on my hands. I'll be doing something different. It just, I know that this is probably, I'm not a serial entrepreneur, and I'm okay with it, admitting that, because a lot of my founder friends are. They love it. They love the build, and that I like the operating, the business.
Yeah.
That's where my skills, I think, are the most utilized, is operating the business.
You introduced this idea of what you'll do next,
mm-hmm,
and I call it the what's next, mm-hmm, leg of the stool.
Yep.
Most entrepreneurs that I meet are not done, and that doesn't mean that they have to become a rinse and repeat entrepreneur.
Right.
In my experience, those who are the most engaged with what they're doing end up meeting other founders and having opportunities,
mm-hmm,
to invest in other companies with the capital that they've, mm-hmm, cleared on the exit. Or they've become a really powerful philanthropist and can lean into the causes that they care the,
mm-hmm,
most about. But let's go back to the cause of today,
yep,
which is Luminary. Right? I often say that when women gather, magical things happen. And when you gather women entrepreneurs around a table at Luminary, what are they talking about?
You know, most people will say, "Oh, it's like, is it always just about access to capital?" That's definitely a conversation. Although I think the conversation's changing. I think they're, because of the market and because of just what's happened over the last couple of years, I feel like there are a lot of founders, in particular women and women of color, that are saying, I don't want to dilute myself to the point where I don't have the business, because even if I sell, what am I going to make on that? I think they've had some stumbling in a fundraising cycle and say, I don't want to go through that again. Can I do this on my own? Or they're looking at different kinds of funding. And I spend a lot of time just in my groups educating people on how they can use different types of funding. I spoke at an event last week on angel investing, and I'm an angel investor in a number of companies. So there's lots of ways. I think that the thing that's coming up a lot right now is the middle.
The messy middle?
Yeah, the messy middle of being in the journey. So a lot of younger, not younger meaning age-wise, younger entrepreneurs meaning the age of their business, they're still focused on that, like, really early stage, building out their social media, you know, product market fit. And then we hear a lot from them. And then we hear from a lot of those that have already exited or they're well into their journey. There are so many founders that are in the middle of it. They're like, but I don't know how to get from here to that exit, or from here to I want to acquire something. And they're looking for guidance, and where they find that, I think in particular Luminary, is from their peers, right? It's from this storytelling, listening to others. And this is why it's so important for podcasts like this to exist and for the stories that we're telling. People learn from them. When I was diagnosed just very quickly with breast cancer a couple of years ago, and after they got the cancer out, and my breast surgeon, I said, I would love to have you come and talk at Luminary just about 1 in 8 women get diagnosed, et cetera, et cetera. She said, people don't listen to doctors. They listen to their friends. They listen to you. So you have to use your platform and you talk about it. And I realized in that moment that she was right. People listen to each other. They want to hear a story that they can connect with. Then they want to ask questions. So when I look around this table, and not just entrepreneurs, because Luminary is a very big mix of professionals, they want to hear from each other. The other thing I think that they're looking for is therapy. It's hard. I'm given the environment we're in right now, and with tariffs and, again, the economy and
difficulty raising capital,
all of it. Yeah. I think people feel a little bit like whiplash from 2020. Like, wait a second, we're going through another. And you just got to remember, like, this is a cycle. We go through these every couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I built my original business plan, I built in a recession just in case. I didn't know a global pandemic was going to happen. But you have to also be ready to adapt to that uncertainty. And it's not easy. So surround yourself not only with great people, but surround yourself also with those four people I talked about earlier, your banker, your accountant, your lawyer, and your financial advisor, because they are an extension of you, and they are going to be somebody to tap into for great advice.
Mm. I love that the members of Luminary want to learn from one another.
Mm-hmm.
And having a seat at that table, I'm wondering what they're not talking about that might concern you or that might be helpful to them, in your opinion?
The numbers.
Okay, let's play that out.
You know, I think most, I'm generalizing, but because I teach this every month at Luminary through a business plan boot camp, when I will do a show of hands, and there could be, my last one, we had over 600 people on it, all genders. I said, how many of you have written a business plan or a deck? 98% no.
What?
No. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll get a lot of like, sort of, I have some things I have to refer. And then probably worse, it's like 99% don't have, when I asked, you have financials or financial projections? Sort of, but most no. And so I think I use the analogy, in January, the bill that you do not want to open is your credit card bill, because it's right after the holidays and you know you likely overspent, right? So you don't want to, you kind of put it to the side. I think a lot of business owners don't want to look at their numbers every month because it tells a story, and it might not be the story they want to be told. Mm. So, and then you fall back on the things that you're good at. Most people say, well, Kate, well, you were a banker, so this just comes naturally to you. No, I'm not running a corporate banking business anymore. Did I learn how to build strategic plans and operate a business? Absolutely. But I also had millions of dollars at my disposal and people that helped me build that business. It wasn't on the back of my, you know, on mine. So I think a lot of founders don't want to take a hard look at their numbers.
What kind of advice do you give them to get started?
So the first thing I tell people is you don't need to be come from finance to do this. The first thing to look at is your expenses. So whether you're already in business, and lots of the people that we work with are, or you're starting out, is do you have a good handle on your expenses? Forget revenue for a second, because that's great, you have revenue, but if your expenses far exceed your revenue, it doesn't work. I would say 75%, if not more, don't. They think there's a number in their head, and then they go back and I make them write it down. Mm. Like every single expense they can think of on a monthly basis. And then we go through the exercise. Okay, now add 20% for the things that you don't know that are coming. And by the way, if that doesn't happen, great. You get an extra, get a little bonus for yourself. And then you amortize them over the year. And you can see it, especially when I'm teaching it live, the light bulbs going off. Wow. Or, oh, I'm underspending, mm-hmm. and this is where I can spend more. Or I can hire somebody. If you do not have a good handle on your numbers, you will not succeed.
Yep, you need.
And that's personal, too.
So everything you're saying is ringing so many bells for me. Because, as you know, I work exclusively with women. Now, sometimes women are married to men,
yep.
or they have sons or male business partners. So it's not at the exclusion of the men. It's to help women have agency with
yep.
their capital. And many women, I'm not saying all, many women say, it's not my bag, or he has to do something. I can't completely emasculate him. They're giving up their power mm-hmm. when they hand their financials to their partner or their mm-hmm. spouse. So I hear that it's not my thing, I'm not good at it. But when I do end up in a discovery conversation with somebody to understand what they're spending, 95% of people have no idea.
Yeah.
And when they think they do, they're off by a large sum. Right. So I love that you're putting the 20% down that you don't know. It all aligns very closely with your personal financial management.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Right. And both of those things need to be watched. Those are the first two legs of the stool.
I for anybody out there that has bootstrapped, stiletto strapped, you know, the way you manage your money from before you started to when you start your business, especially if you're, you know, putting your own capital in, it can be a shock to the system.
Yeah.
But if you don't, and my team knows how focused I am on expense management, and those are the levers that are the easiest things to pull when your cash flow dips or you have something like a global pandemic hit your business. That's the first thing that we did as soon as it was even making the airwaves. My then COO and I looked at all of our expenses, our vendors. We started calling our vendors saying, do you have, just in case this happens, do you have a payment plan? My landlord was the first call I made. And I will say one of 19 vendors at the time worked with us. But if you don't have a good handle on your expenses, then that's why I think a lot of people didn't make it. Obviously, it was a terrible time. I think also when you take other people's money, it becomes much easier to spend than when you are looking at your own money every day and saying, how am I using this dollar versus that dollar versus, well, I've got somebody else's and I'm going to go hire a bunch of people. And that's what we've seen a lot of people overhire, because it's not necessarily their money. But there's goods and bads to taking any kind of money, and you just have to know what you're walking into.
Hmm. I'm having so much fun in this conversation, but I think let's bring it back to, in your experience, having started this business, having scaled this business, having looking to an exit, having gone through an offer, having decided that that offer isn't, you're not ready for that, having really focused in on your personal wealth, what would you say are the top three things you would advise female entrepreneurs to think about and take action on?
Yeah, so I think I'll go back to the acquisition piece. When I started Luminary 6.5 years ago, was that like in my strategy? No. But so you've got to be open to ideas. You've got to be open to meetings. So regardless if you think you're too small or maybe it isn't the right fit, take the meeting. Just take the meeting and then you make the informed decision. But the top three things that I would say that anybody, again, going back to knowing your numbers, they are the key to your success. They will be the key to your success. What's your plan? Not just about pivoting, but how are you adapting? How are you looking at the landscape? How are you listening to your customer? Building relationships, like we've said, with your critical partners, including those four that we mentioned. And then, you know, I always say that the sort of bonus is your ROI on your own time. Hmm. Why do I say this? The more public you become in building a business, small, medium, large, and the goods and the bads, the more people reach out to you and they want your time. So be very deliberate about your time and ask thoughtful questions before you even give up your time. I now have an office hours once a month because I was getting inundated with women in particular on LinkedIn saying, I'd love to have a coffee chat.
Pick your brain.
The worst phrase in the world, pick your brain. And so I create an office hours. And so then anybody can kind of join and they get a little bit of my time and it's 90 minutes a month. And then I have specific people, if they come through a warm introduction, I will never turn down because there is a reason behind that. And then protect your time at all costs.
Okay, thank you so much for your time today. I'm so grateful for your insights. And you know, if folks want to learn more about you or Luminary, where can they go?
Luminary, you can just go to weareluminary.com. That's our website. We Are Luminary on Instagram, and just search for Luminary, Luminary, L-U-M-I-N-A-R-Y, on LinkedIn. And for me, you can find me on LinkedIn. That is my preferred platform always, Kate with a C, Luzio, L-U-Z-I-O. And if you do follow me on Instagram, you're going to see lots of cats, my nieces and nephews, my outfits of the day. If you're going there for business advice, I would suggest you go to LinkedIn.
And don't ask to pick her brain.
And do not ever ask to pick anyone's brain.
Thank you again, Kate. And if you are a female founder and you need some help thinking through what your number is, please feel free to reach out to me at jill.lloyd@ubs.com or on LinkedIn, Jill Faraday Lloyd. Thanks again for joining, and onward.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.